Hi, I'm David Astle, host of Evenings on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, and I'd like to bring you part of a chat that I had with Gregory Kershaw, who's the co-director of The Truffle Hunters.
We entered into this world, and when we stumbled on it by chance, and it felt like a fairy tale to us when we first landed there. And we didn't really know what the story was at the time. We just knew that there was this mystery of these old men who go into the woods late at night, searching for the world's most expensive ingredient, the white Alba truffle. And we knew we wanted to figure out a way to capture the feeling of this place, the feeling that to us felt like a fairy tale. And so we started in on the process of making the film. And what we quickly realized is that everything about the white Alba truffle, everything about the trade around it is a secret. So even finding the truffle hunters, it's a secret within the town. So we would go to a trattoria where they were serving truffle, and we would ask the restaurant owner if he could introduce us to a truffle hunter. And he would say, I've never really met the guy, just put some money in a box. And the next morning a truffle appears. And then he would introduce us to the town priest, who would introduce us to his brother. And it was a very circuitous path. But luckily we were in northern Italy, where the food is great and the wine is plentiful. So, we had a lot of, long meals meeting people and just making friends with people in the community. And then only then were we able to start meeting the truffle hunters. But of course, everything they do is a secret. And we spent a lot of time with them, getting to know them before we even began to think about rolling the camera.
So that patience and that trust, it did take that amount of time to develop. Also, too, I suppose it would have relied on intermediaries and having the very best of intermediaries. In terms of translators and friendlies that you made, what difference did they make in terms of building relationships?
Well, it would have been impossible to make this film without having an amazing translator, because in this region they can speak Italian, but they prefer to speak the local dialect, Piedmontese. So we had an amazing translator who was from the region and spoke the dialect, which it's a language, but it's also kind of a way of being. There's a playfulness and sometimes a kind of combativeness to the language, and you have to be able to navigate that if you want to move around this world. So our translator, Letizia Guglielmino, eventually became our co-producer on the project, because she was such an essential part of what we were doing.
And in fact, Luca, who's the director of Call Me By Your Name, is a well-known filmmaker in Italy, and made a very big difference as well.
Yeah, Luca Guadagnino is, he's an executive producer on the project. Mm-hmm. And we're huge fans of all his films. Call Me By Your Name was one of our favorites, of course, but he's done so many great projects. And we love Luca because he makes very beautiful, artful films, but they're also really able to connect with a wide audience. And he saw some of our footage. We were introduced to him by one of our friends, and he saw some of our footage and he connected with it. And we started a conversation, and he decided to support the film by becoming our executive producer. And it's been, it's just been a really amazing conversation that we've had with him about the process of making a film, and now that we're bringing it out to the world, he's helping us share it.
The thing about secret societies, Gregory, is that they tend to like to stay secret. How did you manage to work your way into the cult of the truffle hunter?
Well, it was time. Mm. The first trip that we took there, we spent about a month getting to meet people, and then we said, okay, we're gonna leave. We're gonna go back home. I live in Stockholm, Sweden, and my partner Michael Dweck lives in New York City. And we said, we're gonna be back in 2 weeks. And they said, yeah, right. and we came back in 2 weeks, and we stayed for another month. And then we left for a little while, but we kept coming back. And we were lifted by the joy of this place. The people that we were filming were 80-year-old men whose lives were so rich. And we would be following them through the woods as they were truffle hunting. And these are 80-year-old men, and we couldn't keep up with them. And so it was just, we had an incredible, filming was like a celebration every day. And I think we got a lot out of it, and I think they enjoyed it. And And they realized that, you know, the world that they have, that they occupied, it's, they have something very special and rare that is disappearing from a lot of the world. This connection to nature, this connection to community, this connection to the ways of the past. They have all that. And I think they wanted to share it with us and share it with the world. And we wanted to make a film that celebrated it, that celebrated that joy that we experienced with them.
There's a lovely quote from Carlo at one point in the film. And Carlo is a man who's in his mid-80s. And he says to his wife, no point talking about those years that are gone. Well, let's worry about the ones that are left. It is the most life-affirming film. It is a tonic for these times. And in fact, I understand that that's been the response. People have kind of found this is the film that offers the balm that the pandemic and the modern world has, you know, kind of been presenting.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you brought that quote up with Carlo, because that was when we heard that quote, when we heard him say that, we realized, oh my God, my partner and I looked at each other and we said, that's the film.
Yeah.
That's everything. That's what the whole film is about. And he just turned 89. He lives life to its full potential. And, you know, we had no idea what the response would be when we made this film. We made it because we loved it. We made it because we fell in love with this world, and we needed to share it and celebrate it. But we'd finished it a day before the premiere at Sundance last year. And so the only time we had seen it, it had been me and my partner in our sound mixer, and that's it. So we had no idea what to expect. And we had the first screening at Sundance, and the reception was really beyond anything we could have imagined, the way it's been embraced. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, the people, I think when they see this film, they connect to all these things that have been, you know, stripped from our lives in so many ways, the way that digital culture has taken us away from each other, the way we've been removed from nature. And watching this film hopefully is a chance to kind of be transported back into that and to get a sense of what it's like to connect to all those things that are missing.
Gregory, I've got to ask you, we also get the dealers, we get the connoisseurs, we get the truffle graders. The challenge, I suppose, as a filmmaker is to translate the aroma, which is the other big addictive element of the Alba truffle. How did you even approach that as a challenge?
Yeah, it's something we thought about a lot. And we, in the process of making this film, we wanted to use the full potential of cinema to transport the audience into this world. And, you know, the visual and the audio, that's a big part of it. But we wanted to find a way to kind of touch these other senses, to make, you know, to convey the idea of what it is like to consume a truffle. And there's one scene in the film later on where the truffle judge, so this is the man who sits at the center of the big truffle fair, and every truffle that is sold in this region, it has to pass under his nose, and he has to decide if it's up to standard, and if it's not, they have to get rid of it, and that could mean the loss of thousands, tens of thousands, $20,000 or even more, if it doesn't meet his standards. So he's a very important man, and he lives through his senses. He was a wine taster. He was a chocolate taster, and now he's the truffle judge. And we filmed him eating a truffle. In my opinion, the very best way to eat a truffle, which is just a simple fried egg with white truffle just shaved over it. And we filmed him, and we found this music track, Caruso, and we played it over him eating this truffle, and all of a sudden we just looked at the footage and we said, well, that's what a truffle tastes like. And we did this little trick with the sound design where the music, you kind of feel it when you first start watching the scene, you feel it on the outside, and then when he tastes the truffle, we did a sound design trick that sort of brings the music into your head. And at that moment, we think at that moment, the audience should taste a truffle.
That's synesthesia. That is strategic synesthesia, Gregory. What a beautiful idea. In effect, I'll have to relive that scene because it is a rapturous scene. I didn't realize how I was being so artfully manipulated.